Marx follows the ever-changing landscape to discuss the latest pressing issues relevant to brand owners in Europe and beyond. During this series, Marx members and special guests share updates, experiences, and opinions. This is IP Law Today. This is Talking Marx.
Hello, and welcome to the Talking Marx podcast. I'm James Nerton, the Marx editor, and I'm pleased to be hosting this episode on trademarks and artificial intelligence. Today, I'm joined by two members of the Marx cyberspace team. Gabrielle Engels is a certified IP specialist and counsel at DLA Piper in Cologne, and she has a particular interest in issues relating to the internet. And Ezio Bonacolso is senior legal counsel IP at Nestle. Qualified in Italy and Spain, he's worked both in-house and in private practice. Welcome to both of you.
Thank you for having us.
Thank you for the invitation.
As I mentioned, today we're going to be talking about artificial intelligence and trademarks. I think we're all becoming more familiar with AI in our everyday lives, in our work, when we're traveling in vehicles or shopping and ordering online. And of course, in areas such as scientific research, healthcare, and even playing games. But how do these new tools and techniques affect trademarks? Do we have to rethink how trademarks are used and think about rules about liability, for example? These are some of the questions that we'll be addressing today. So, Gabrielle, I want to start with you. People probably have heard about AI in the context of self-driving cars and smart products and things like that. But what else does AI entail?
Thank you, James. Artificial intelligence encompasses a spectrum of applications and products with varying levels of autonomy. When you think about it, almost every part of our lives is affected by AI nowadays. We are woken in the morning by an iPhone that only unlocks when it sees the face of its own user using facial recognition program. And when we ask Google Maps to navigate the quickest route to work, allowing for current traffic flow. In the evening, we may ask Netflix to choose what to watch because its algorithm knows us best.
So yeah, these are some things that we're already familiar with in terms of AI. But I mean, how much further do you think AI can go? And do you think there are other opportunities that it will offer in the future?
Surely. And so when we talk of AI, we also have to think about the definition of AI. So in my view, a true AI system is capable of learning, basically mimicking the problem solving and decision making capabilities of the human mind, and it's just not an autonomous system, in my view.
Interesting. So that's quite a broad definition, I would say, then.
Yeah. So the EU, in April last year, it published a draft regulation on AI, on artificial intelligence, and included such a very broad definition what falls under the term. Loosely summarized, this AI Act defines artificial intelligence as software-based technology, which generates some form of output based on interactions it has with its environment. This would capture the examples mentioned before, but also something as mundane as spam filters and autocorrect.
Interesting, yes. I think some people think of AI as being something, you know, that's very far off, like a, you know, like a human-like computer, but it actually encompasses much more than that, doesn't it?
It does. And in this act, the EU proposed a risk-based approach. So it doesn't have a definition on, well, the question is not whether it is a system of AI, but rather determining what level of risk it poses. So let me quickly elaborate on this. The AI Act differentiates between four categories of risk, ranging from minimal to unacceptable. AI systems seem to pose a minimal risk, such as search algorithms and spam filters, basically the vast majority of AI systems which we use in our everyday lives, are not subject to special obligation, whilst those with an unacceptable risk are prohibited. An example for the latter would be facial identification programs. You have probably seen this in a film. surveillance cameras, which automatically identify the current location of a person in the public space in real time using biometrics for the purpose of law enforcement, but AI, which directly interacts with humans, such as chatbots, would be an example of a limited risk system. They only then need to fulfill transparency rules in order to make users aware of the fact that they interact with AI. And the fourth category, where the AI Act focus lies on, is regulating high-risk systems. These are forms of artificial intelligence which could have an adverse impact on people's safety or their fundamental rights. This can be as generic as an AI safety component included in another product, or as specific as AI used in the context of migration and border control management. However, let me say that this regulation is only a draft at this point. The AI Act is currently passing through various EU bodies and committees as part of the legislative process, and it will be put before the EU Parliament later this year. Nonetheless, I don't think it will come into effect before 2025. I mean, we all know how long such processes can take.
Yes, indeed. And I'm sure we'll all be following that. So to what extent, Gabrielle, does the draft address liability, including trademark liability?
The current draft does not address liability issues at all, James. It only focuses on the requirements the developers of AI systems must fulfill to even be allowed to develop and operate AI. The EU is currently in the process of deciding whether adapting existing liability legislation on an EU and national level is sufficient to cover the scope of issues that are arising in relation to AI liability, or if it should introduce a separate piece of legislation, likely a directive.
How do you think all these things will affect trademarks, and how will the AI Act, will that have an impact on trademarks at all?
Liability resulting from products being defective or behaving in a way they are not supposed to is currently regulated by the Product Liability Directive. In my view, as far as applicability to AI is concerned, the directive as it stands is not suited to tackling the issues specific to artificial intelligence. So the directive was initially adopted in 1985, when obviously most of the technology that we use today was unimaginable. It is therefore ill-equipped to adapt to the constantly evolving nature of AI, as it currently requires a tangible product to be defective when it's put into circulation. The definition of product therefore needs to be expanded to include intangible software and therefore artificial intelligence. Moreover, due to the inherent continuous adaption of AI systems throughout their life cycle, the fault or defect in the software, which ultimately leads to damage, may only appear after its introduction on the market. The entire notion of what constitutes a defect would therefore have to be overhauled for the directive to even be applicable. And these are only two minor issues that need to be addressed. To name a third one, removing the development risk defense, commonly referred to as the state-of-the-art defense in US jurisprudence, is necessary to ensure producers of products that are continuously learn and adapt while in operation remain strictly liable for.
Thank you for explaining that, Gabrielle. So yes, very interesting to look at the directive and to look at the liability issue. So turning to you, Ezio, what do you think about the way that liability is governed, and how do you think that could change? What changes would you like to see in terms of liability?
There are also some practical concerns which claimants face under the current laws, in particular evidentiary issues. The complexity and opacity of the inner workings of AI systems can make it almost impossible to understand how an AI arrived at a specific decision. How can rights owner determine which part of the process was faulty or whether that fault caused the damage, let alone provide evidence of this? With AI system, this burden of proof is nearly impossible to meet. These difficulties are amplified further where multiple AI systems are involved. the communication, networking, and interaction between different AI systems leads to unpredictable behavior and a lack of transparency from the perspective of right owners. In a worst-case scenario, more than one AI is responsible, making establishing causation between the fault in the AI and the damage even more difficult. Where it cannot be determined whether the problems in the different AIs individually or cumulatively caused the infringement. Such ambiguity might lead to no liability in either cases, as neither can be proven.
Yeah, very valid point, Etsy. Thank you. If I may add, speaking of causation, this begs the question how this lack of transparency you were talking about can be counterbalanced. Legal constructs which are traditionally used to achieve a fair distribution of risk include presumption rules to ease or even reverse the burden of proof to the benefit of the injured party, here the rights owners, and or introducing strict liability regimes. That means regardless of fault for AI operators. Such allocation of risk needs to be made between developers, operators, users, and injured parties. And of course, all parties have a different idea of what this should look like. So personally, if you ask me, I would differentiate according to the type of artificial intelligence. For example, increasingly automated processes mean a decreasing ability of users to influence what the AI does, where the user's input can only influence the AI's output to a limited degree. The user should not be liable for unforeseen damage caused by the AI. In these instances, the developers and operators should be held accountable. However, the general liability due to a fault-based behavior shouldn't be eliminated. If a user employs an AI without the necessary diligence and thereby violates the rights of another, that user should be held liable. Just as a developer who releases an insufficiently controllable AI system should be held accountable for any damage created by the system. Interestingly, in its separate initiative for a law on AI liability, the EU has suggested some combination of these liability constructs mentioned, also founded on a risk-based approach. This could be achieved by introducing a strict liability regime for those AI systems which hold the significant potential to randomly cause harm to one or more persons. Operators in this type of AI would thereby always be liable for damages caused by their system, irrespective of fault. If the actions of another, say a user of the AI, were additionally culpably causal for the damage, they would become jointly liable with the operator. For AI systems which pose a lower risk, a reversal of burden of proof would provide a solution to balance the interests of the injured party and those of the AI developers, operators, and users. I think that's a very interesting approach. And as mentioned before, the EU is likely to announce in the third quarter later this year whether the AI liability shall be tackled with the Product Liability Act we spoke about, or such a separate kind of legislation, potentially a directive.
That's very interesting, Gabriel. Thank you. So it sounds like, am I right? You think to some extent a sort of flexible approach depending on the nature of the AI is going to be necessary?
Since the EU proposes the risk-based approach, I'm more for the type of, you know, the nature of the artificial intelligence to tackle the issue.
Yeah, interesting. And Ezio, would you agree with that? Do you have any views on that?
Yeah, I think what Gabby Wright said is the right approach, in my view, also from our perspective.
So perhaps we can turn then to trademarks more specifically. And I wonder if you could illustrate some of the issues we've been discussing with some examples from the area of trademarks that will be familiar to our listeners.
Yep. If you don't mind, I can start with this. And I think we have a good scenario, which could be the recognition, the voice recognition programs. So if we take a digital assistant which operates with a voice recognition program like Alexa or any other available in the market, what happens, for instance, if we ask Alexa to order something from a specific brand and instead we are giving an alternative suggestion or a similar product from another vendor? Let's say that we want to order a coffee over Amazon. If we ask Alexa to order Nescafe or Nespresso, we may be prompted with a response telling us that another brand, maybe even an Amazon Basic or any other, let's say, alternative product, offers the same product for a lower cost. Based on that, the consumer might be swayed to no longer order the Nescafe, but the cheaper alternative. So where do we begin here? Nestlé has the injured party, cannot tell who's in the blame for this infringement. Did the AI independently decided to do this, or was the algorithm specifically programmed to push Amazon products over those of other vendors? And if so, then by whom and following which criteria? Is Amazon itself or a third-party developer or any other algorithm that can influence that offer and choice? So in this case, the previously mentioned evidential problems could mean all infringing parties might escape from liability, simply because they have chosen to use a system that is impenetrable and incomprehensible to the injured party to determine the infringement and the allocation of responsibilities.
Yeah, thank you, Etienne. If I may add, we're seeing this type of scenario with increasing frequency in front of both national and EU courts. Platforms like Google and Amazon are having to defend the targeted use of ads as apparent search results for certain brand names. In those cases, the infringing party was determined to be the party responsible for selecting which listings are displayed. Consequently, where this choice is made by an algorithm operated and controlled by a platform, as with the Amazon case, liability for infringement lies with that platform. Where the selection is actively made by an advertiser, as with Google AdWords, for example, liability lies with the advertiser as primary infringer. The platform operator would only be liable as secondary infringer if he leaves his role as neutral intermediary, that is, in case he's aware of the infringement and does not undertake reasonable efforts to prevent it. So coming back to your example, Alexa would effectively function as a form of audible search results page. The spoken output of the AI assistant would appear to be determined in a similar, if not identical way to the algorithm used by Amazon for typed searches. Therefore, in my view, the reasoning seems equally applicable here, and the principles of secondary or contributory infringement would apply. So where third-party competitors have actively instructed Amazon's algorithm to push alternative products through Alexa, or maybe Siri, they should be held liable for the potential trademark infringement, where the AI has independently decided to suggest this alternative product, its operator should be held liable. If Amazon, for example, merely purchased a finished algorithm from a third-party developer without being able to further program or influence it, this third-party developer should additionally be held liable, in my view. So, and as we have already discussed, most of the time, the injured party, the rights owner, like Nestlé, won't be able to determine which of these scenarios is the case. In, in such instances, a joint liability of the involved parties would, in my opinion, be considered the most appropriate result, in particular from the perspective of a brand owner. The liability among the parties might then be borne according to their contribution of the infringement, but basically the brand owner can pick who to go after, so to say. As for the relationship between developer, operator, and potentially third-party vendor, how they will end up splitting these costs between themselves, well, then depends on the risk allocation determined in the contract set up between them. For example, in the purchase agreement between Amazon or Google and the third-party developer of an AI search engine software.
It's going to be a very interesting and complex area, isn't it? It reminds me a little bit of the debates about Google AdWords and keyword advertising in the early days. And obviously that took a number of cases, didn't it, and a number of developments to resolve that.
Yeah, and there's, as mentioned, a lot of case law on this, which in my view is still applicable here until the EU comes up with a directive or whatever they decide to do on that liability.
Well, it'll be very interesting to see how things develop and whether that's through a directive or through cases. You know, I think you mentioned, Gabrielle, that there may be some cases coming through that will look at these kind of issues. So I'm sure we all look forward to seeing what comes out of that.
Yeah, and the cyberspace team will surely report on this. So watch out.
Yes, that would be great. And there was another case study, Gabrielle, I think we were going to talk about search reports and smart contract clauses. Do you want to say a bit about that?
Yes, thank you, James. So another example would be an AI program used for trademark clearance searches. So this is an example we all are aware with. So currently, clearance searches are usually conducted through kind of semi-autonomous system where a lawyer interprets the results provided by an AI program and ultimately advises on the risk. However, it is easy to imagine the transition to a fully autonomous system in which the program assesses the risk by itself and unsupervised. What would happen if the system were to make an incorrect evaluation and a company sued for trademark infringement as a result? As the AI output itself is not causing the rights violation, the situation is a little different here. Only when the user of the AI acts upon the advice given by the AI and, for example, registers the trademark, the damage is done. The evidentiary issues related to fault or causality are not really problematic here. This scenario is, in my view, mainly a question of risk allocation. So the allocation of risk would here mainly depend on the agreement drawn up between the service provider and user. Well, the service provider has assured that the evaluation of its AI are reliable, it will most likely owe its user compensation for the costs they have incurred due to the trademark infringement. Where there's no such assurance provided or it's explicitly excluded, the user will regularly be liable in full for the trademark infringement. So if a lawyer were to use such a fully autonomous service and relies completely on the assessment provided by the AI when advising his client, he would most likely not have any recourse against the service provider. So the same considerations could also be transferred to so-called smart contracts, which provide customizable contract templates, making the employment of lawyers for contract drafting redundant. As with the previous case, the devil's in the specific risk allocation clauses.
That's very interesting, Gabrielle, and something that will affect everyone in this field, I'm sure. So we are coming towards the end of the podcast. Before we finish, I just want to ask both of you, really, bearing in mind everything that we've said, what do you think we should be thinking about in regard to AI liability for trademarks, and what key points do you have to take away for our listeners?
So in my view, unless the EU or individual member states pass specific legislation on AI liability, as we said, will likely take some time, the general principles of liability will continue to govern these types of cases. The courts, as outlined, have frequently held that they hold these parties liable that have predetermined the concrete output of the AI system. This can be the individual advertiser pre-selecting which search terms will trigger the ad, or the operator of the platform that has employed an algorithm to their gain, which has independently caused the violation of rights. For those using AI in the course of their business, the most effective shield against the cost of claims will be the agreements reached with the developer of the AI, as well as with any third parties potentially influencing the output of the AI. Additionally, I must say a good insurance policy will be essential. Businesses will also need to ensure that they are compliant with the AI Act once enforced in terms of operating their AI without any specific legislation so far, and to avoid the discussed evidentiary and causation issues due to the lack of transparency. It is worthwhile to work out the fine print when it comes to risk allocation and insurance. In this regard, the type of AI and its effect functions should be stipulated in the agreement. So is it fully autonomous, semi-autonomous? Because in a semi-autonomous system, one will have to establish whether there's significant level of human control and the degree of significance of that control in order to allocate the liability and the risk.
Thank you very much. And Ezio, what are your takeaways?
Well, I think that every in-house counsel, regardless of the industry sector, will be dealing with AI today and even more in the future. And in particular, with liability issues, as mentioned by Gabby, and will be asked to provide advice on these matters. So from an industry perspective, we will first have to take a closer look at the type of AI and establish whether there is a significant level of human control and the degree of significance of control. This should be stipulated in the agreement with the AI service provider in order to properly allocate the risk. To eliminate those risks, we will have to request that the AI provider takes out an AI or a machine learning type of insurance to make sure that the liability gap is covered. As I said, this maybe is not the final solution, but could help mitigating those risks that we just mentioned.
Thank you very much. So it really sounds like a lot of it comes down to assessing the risk and where the risk lies and the liability, as you say.
Correct.
Well, I think that brings us to the end of today's podcast. So thank you very much, Gabrielle and Ezio, for explaining some of these really interesting and evolving issues. And people who want to know more about this topic can have a look at the cyberspace team page of the Marks website, where all the team's articles and resources can be found. And if you're interested in this topic, I should also mention that Marks is hosting a webinar on AI and copyright. That's with members of both the copyright and the cyberspace teams. And that will be on the 12th of May this year, 2022. And the details are not yet on the Marks website when we're recording this, but they will be very soon, I'm sure. So do have a look at marks.org/events if you'd be interested in registering for that webinar on AI and copyright. And indeed, you can find lots of other things on the Marks website, including other future events and webinars and other resources, articles, reports and so on. So do make the most of that. But that wraps up today's podcast. Thank you very much to everyone for joining us. We will be back with another edition of Talking Marks next month.
Marks follows the ever-changing landscape to discuss the latest pressing issues relevant to brand owners in Europe and beyond. During this series, Marks members and special guests share updates, experiences and opinions. This is IP Law Today. This is Talking Marks.